Gilman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It is Nashville's number one afternoon sports drive, afternoon drive sports radio show. Ian is here today. Hello, Ian.
What up, what up?
So I am not one to like shout out other, you know, oh, go listen to this or go listen to that. But I am somebody that if I think you do good work, I will tell you it is worth listening to. And the Athletic Football Show, the same podcast that brought us the Diana Russini, Mike Vrabel didn't get hired by another team because he's too large podcast, had an excellent sit down today with Brian Callahan, the coach of the Tennessee Titans. Now, again, skip, you know, about the first hour of this podcast to where you get to Callahan, but Callahan was excellent. You know, they asked so many different questions. He answered them thoroughly, answered them honestly. You know, it was so refreshing to listen to Brian Callahan do this interview. I'm telling you, go listen to it. It was so refreshing to hear him do this interview. I sat to myself and I'm like, I can't remember the last time I listened to a podcast with somebody who's in charge of the Titans and really felt like they told me something, you know, explained things to me. And again, I'm viewing this as a listener here, and it was almost like the coach was treating me like I was smart enough to understand how he is running his football team. You know, Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan, or Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker, they do these podcasts. They BS you the entire time. They tell you about how great it was that they didn't go to the Senior Bowl. Or they tell you about how smart they are with business school and AI cancer curing models. But they never explain to you, like, so why did you pick a guard 11th last year before drafting your franchise quarterback? They never really explain things like that. And then the previous administration, Vrabel and John Robinson. And look, I got a lot of respect for both guys. I like John Robinson a lot. Both guys had this issue that I think got them fired early, which was they thought they were above explaining things. Like, no. I'm in charge. Don't need to talk to me about it. I'm above it. What do you mean? Why did I draft Isaiah Wilson and completely flub it? And why? How dare you ask, peasant? And that, quite frankly, there was a difference between John Robinson in 2016 when he took the job and John Robinson at the end. And I quite frankly think some of that got him fired. Which leads me to Brian Callahan. Yesterday, we talked a lot about how I still think Mike Vrabel's a good coach. I do. People get mad every time I say it. I'm not going to stop saying it. I think Vrabel is a good coach. And I think Vrabel will go somewhere else. And I think Vrabel will rattle the cages of that team. And I think Vrabel, if he has a veteran quarterback, he'll win some games. But Mike Vrabel's not for everybody. And Mike Vrabel can't last everywhere. Because as the cycle of football turns over, he doesn't really handle losing very well. And it becomes a problem. Brian Callahan is the opposite. And in this interview that Brian Callahan did, he completely outlined and explained, and I thought this was just brilliant, completely outlined and explained the difference between his style of coaching and the style of coaching that preceded him. Now, he wasn't asked about Vrabel or anything else, but was talking about a different era. What does Vrabel know? He knows Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick got his start in what, the 70s? He knows Urban Meyer. Is there anybody who's more of an a-hole than Urban Meyer? Is there anybody whose style is more ill-suited for the NFL than Urban Meyer, who didn't even last an entire season? You know the answer to that. And I've said this time and time again, that my generation didn't grow up in the Great Depression. The generation before mine didn't grow up in the Great Depression, but my parents, their parents did. And I always thought it was about the Great Depression, and I always thought that because of the Great Depression, there was kind of this sentiment that, hey, man, be lucky you have a job. Be lucky that you have somewhere to go to work where they give you a paycheck, where you can feed your family. So if they tell you to eat nails, you eat nails. That's what you do. And I think a lot of people just sucked it up. Hey, you're the coach. You're the coach. You're the coach. You say do it, I do it. And there's kind of this expected entitled respect of I'm the coach, so everybody listens to me. Again, the same kind of arrogance that I think at the end probably got John Robinson and Mike Vrabel fired. This was Brian Callahan explaining his coaching style and how it contrasts with that of the past on the Athletic Football Show.
I think there was a time and a place maybe over history where, you know, I coach, you play.
You listen.
And you do what I tell you. And then that's there's a probably an element of like authoritative, militaristic in the sense
absolutely.
That like you're taking orders. You're a soldier, you take orders. And I think that's just changed. I think players today, they want to know why. They want to have input. They want to feel like their opinions are valued. And I think that's what a healthy working relationship looks like in any field. But in particular, in our game where, you know, these guys make a lot of money too, and they feel like they should be able to voice an opinion and have it listened to. And I don't disagree with that. I think that that is how it should work. And the days of like being able to just say, hey, this is how we're doing it, be quiet, do what I say, I just don't think players respond to that anymore.
Bingo. That is why Brian Callahan, and I've never seen him call a play, I've never seen him coach a game, I've never seen him react to an adverse situation when his butt's on the line, but that's why Brian Callahan has this job. This is exactly what the Titans need. I talked about the social media manager, right? Do you think Bill Belichick cares about the social media manager for the New England Patriots? Of course not. He doesn't have to. If he's walking into the building at the same time the social media manager is walking into the building, it's probably like, hey, whatever you do, don't say anything to Bill. That doesn't work in today's era. If Brian Callahan and the social media manager are walking into the building at the same time, the expectation is that Brian Callahan will say, hey, how you been, Johnny? How everything? Good. Okay. Yeah. No, it's great. Oh, yeah. No, this. Yeah. No, no. Make him feel important. Brian Callahan gets that. And regardless of whether or not that's important, you know, it's really, I mean, are you going to win or lose because the coach walks in there and he says to the social media manager, hey, man, how's your day? How was your weekend? Good, good, good. Probably not. Probably not. And a guy like Belichick probably thinks that's 13 seconds that I wasted that I could have been thinking about how to stop the blitz against the Steelers. But that's not the society we live in anymore. The society we live in is everybody wants to feel cared for. Everybody wants to feel important. That is the society we live in. If you manage people, i.e., if you don't get to choose the talent pool, but the way that the talent pool was raised chooses you, you have to adapt. I asked Charlie Weiss when I talked to him on my SiriusXM show last weekend. I said, you know, do you think Belichick can change? If Belichick gets another, do you think Belichick can change? Where he can go in an organization and not run the GM out of town. Where he can go in an organization and not be a complete a-hole. And Charlie Weiss was like, why would you want Bill Belichick to do that? And the reason why is because that style doesn't work anymore. He used the term militaristic, and I started to wonder, you know, I link a lot of this to the Great Depression, saying that, hey, jobs were so scarce back then that entire society of people that grew up during the Depression are so afraid of not, or were, unfortunately, so afraid of not being employed that it didn't matter what you had to do as long as you were able to be employed. You did it. But maybe it does go back to World War II or Vietnam. I don't know. But today's kids grow up playing Xbox and PlayStation. And I don't even know what the Nintendo gaming console is called. Ian, do you know you have kids?
There's the Nintendo Switch.
There you go. Play. The Nintendo Switch. I mean, they, trust me. These kids today, they're not growing up in the Great Depression. So times have changed. And that's the difference between what you had and what you have. And where this organization is right now, this is what they need. Will Levis is a puppy. He is a 25-year-old. He is not ready to run a football team. But as is where our society is now and where it's headed, I don't think he'd react very well to a dictator. Even if he did have respect for Vrabel, and I think he did. But even if he did have respect for Vrabel, you know, there was a video, I want to say TD, God, I can't remember who, after the Atlanta game where Vrabel was outside the locker room, basically lecturing Levis before he walked into. That doesn't work anymore when you're not good. When you're good, like Peter Laviolette with the Rangers, who inherited a veteran good team, then it's like, yeah, hey, coach is all about business and we're just focused on winning. And that works. But when you're trying to build something, everybody has to be cared for. Everybody has to be cared for. And that's what Brian Callahan's bringing. You may call it soft, and maybe it is. But the reality is, this is where society is heading. And I would argue, society is getting softer. So get with the times. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I'm just telling you, the way that Chuck Knoll coached Terry Bradshaw, where Terry Bradshaw sat the bench and Terry Bradshaw went up to his office and wanted a trade and Chuck Knoll crossed his arms and laughed at him, that doesn't work anymore. Like, I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, it does not work in today's society. 615-737-1025. We'll get your thoughts in on this. 615-737-1025. And there's another thing that I think Brian Callahan, that I think Brian Callahan's honesty gets him the benefit of the doubt. And where that actually matters. Because again, this is all about winning or losing, but it does actually matter in one spot. We'll get that at, we'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 615-737-1025. It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday, 1025, 1063 The Game.
We're a few days removed from the draft here. You guys have J.C. Latham, 7th overall. When you guys were looking at the offensive tackle group, did you see a gap after him from the other guys who were available? I mean, where did you kind of have them slotted with Alt in there as well?
Yeah, we felt like those that Joe Alt and J.C. Latham were the two top tackles, guys that we felt really comfortable that were worthy of the pick at 7, you know, that they were bona fide top 10 talents, guys that you think they're going to be plug-in starters and play for you for the next 10 years. That's kind of the goal when you're picking in the top 10. And we felt really good about both of those guys. It was a talented class. There was some good players, Talisi Fuaga and Olaf Ashanu and Troy Fontenot, all those guys. Those are all going to be really good players. But we felt like for tackles, with those two were the top two tackles in the draft, and either one of those guys would be great fits for us if they were there at 7.
That was Brian Callahan. Ian, when's the last time we heard transparency like that?
Good question.
I mean, again, it's not like he told us anything that we didn't necessarily, like, we know they were interested in Joe Alt. We know that Fuaga and Fashnu were good players. At one point he talked about, you know, hey, we had to sit there and compare about, hey, if, you know, it's tackle or if it's Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers or Romadunze, you know, what do we end up doing? And I mean, that's a level of transparency we don't hear from the Titans very often, right? You know, it reminded me of the 1999 draft, the year they took Javon Curse. Andrea Kramer was outside the Titans facility. And when the Titans went on the clock, Chris Berman, who was hosting the draft for ESPN, sent it to Andrea Kramer. And she goes, Boomer, they're going to pick Javon Curse out of Florida. Now, there's a lot of questions as where he may play, but I just talked to GM Floyd Reese, and he said that Javon Curse will play right defensive end. And they had Curse ranked 7th on their board, and they're shocked he fell to them at 16 or wherever it was. How hard is it to say things like that? How hard is it? You know, the Titans, look, Brian Callahan, I will say this. There should be a valuable lesson for him to be learned from this, which is when you go to the podium after you make a pick like that, instead of just kind of crossing your arms and saying, oh, well, we think he can play left tackle. Oh, instead of that, like, say those things. Explain it. Talk about the athleticism and how if the guy's athletic enough, he should be able to move over there. And I get it. You're talking to one guy, so it's more conversational as opposed to everybody trying to get their questions in. But the Titans, I mean, this level of transparency, the Titans do not practice this. You know, Chad Brinker did a 50-minute interview at the Senior Bowl with Mike Keith and them, and I still don't even know what his job is. I mean, is he in charge of Rand? But Rand picks the players, but he's in charge of Rand. But Rand also reports to Amy, but he said that he's going to be more involved in picking players this year than he was in the past when he was assistant GM. And I don't know what the hell the assistant GM does other than help the GM pick. You see what I'm saying? You know, plus, with Rand, I mean, that's the guy that got up in front of you all and said that the offensive line's problems last year were injuries and that the reason you sucked was because the ball didn't bounce your way. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. And then Vrabel and Robinson, they just thought they were too good to answer questions and explain things and tell the media, which is the bridge to the fans, why they did what they did. And here's why this is important. And again, Mike Vrabel, I don't know if he thinks this is true or not. I don't know if he would hear this and say, Jared Stillman doesn't know if it's pumped or stuffed. I don't know. I think that that level of transparency combined with accountability probably gives Brian Callahan the benefit of the doubt if things don't go well. And I'm not talking about this year. But I'm talking about when push starts to come to shove. Year two, year three. For a head coach, maybe year five, you have a little bit of success and then you hit the skids a little bit and now you're year five and you got some injuries and you got, I think that helps you out. There could have been a very compelling argument for Mike Vrabel to remain as the Tennessee Titans coach. Hell, most of you wanted Mike Vrabel to remain as the Tennessee Titans coach. A very compelling argument. This guy was 2 years away from being the head coach of the year in the NFL. You could say the offensive line's not his fault. He didn't pick those players. He didn't miss on Dylan Raidens. He didn't draft Caleb Farley. He didn't trade that second round pick for Julio Jones. He didn't trade away A.J. Brown. He had a rookie quarterback for half the season. Can't blame him for that. They're bringing him along. If you really wanted to, you could have made an excuse for Mike Vrabel. But ultimately, the Titans got sick of his bull crap. The Titans were willing to make the excuses for Mike Vrabel. That's why they told Diana, unless they outright lied, which, again, maybe they did. They've done it before. But it sounded like on Thanksgiving, they wanted to make the excuses for Vrabel. But it was just too much every day, some passive-aggressive, non-accountable, entitled, terse bullcrap from Vrabel. It was. You know, again, like, you can't, he gets up there, and I'll use, the, you know, when it comes to me and him, like, he gets up there and goes all in on Craig Aukerman and tells me that I don't know what I'm talking about. And that he knows what he's talking about. Then later in the year when things aren't going well, I ask him about the coaching staff. Oh, he goes all in on them. They're great. They're this, they're that. They get two punts blocked against Indianapolis, miss an extra point. And it's like, okay, I got to fire Craig Aukerman. But at any point, if Vrabel ever put his hand up in the air and say, hey, here's why this failed. Nope. There is a level to this of, hey, if you explain to somebody why you failed and it makes sense, like sometimes it's very easy for people, if they like you, to say, okay, yeah, oh, fine, makes sense to me. I mean, I got it. I asked a former general manager one time that I have a lot of respect for. I said to him, I go, why did you fail? You know, almost every coach or GM I've ever met, whenever they get fired, they always have an excuse. It's always, oh, we were 3-2, and we had three home games, and then the running back broke his foot, and then he goes, I missed on the quarterback. because that's what it was. He told me that they did all the homework. They watched all the tape. They talked to high school teachers. They did the whole Megillah. They did it. They drafted the quarterback. They draft the quarterback about a month later, a year later. Guy goes up to the GM and is like, I don't want to say this because I don't want to give away who it was and what the GM, but he had a certain hobby that it's not illegal or bad or it's just weird. And he was talking to the GM about this hobby. And the GM walked out of the room with his head in his hand and goes, oh my God, what did we just do? And I hear that and I'm like, okay, you've learned from your mistakes. Like, you know why you screwed up and you can admit that you screwed up. I think Brian Callahan can do that. I think Brian Callahan, if things don't go well, Brian Callahan can explain why they didn't go well. And some of that includes, I screwed up. I didn't do a good job of hiring the offensive line coach. I thought we could make J.C. Latham a left tackle. I thought we could, whatever. And, like, no offense, this isn't the hardest town to get buy-in. It's really not. And so I think Brian Callahan, given the way that he treats other people, the accountability that I think he's willing to give, and the transparency that he's already shown, I am convinced that if he was in Vrabel's shoes at the end of last year, he'd have kept his job. I always talk about Peter Laviolette and how I think Peter Laviolette got fired prematurely by the Predators because, in all fairness, I thought that he had done enough to be able to keep his job through the end of that season where they had just, they had won the division the year before, they had won the President's Trophy the year before that, they had won the Western Conference the year before that. I'm like, you're not going to give the guy the full year to finish the job? Like, at least see if he can turn it around? But Peter doesn't take losing very well, and he doesn't handle it very well. And I think that bit him in the tush. Whereas John Hines, I mean, he had everybody over there convinced that he was Scotty Bowman. And it's just, thank God Barry Trotz has a set of eyeballs and was like, no, 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 we're getting a better coach. But, I mean, John Hines was going to get another year if anybody else was running that team. Because they love him over there. Like, I'm telling you, it hurt people in that organization to fire John Hines. It hurt them because they love that guy so much. So all these coaches and GMs, they say whatever they want about, oh, I don't need to be nice. I got to be the coach. I got to make the hard decisions. I don't have time for this. I got to worry about that. This is such a hard job. You don't understand. You don't. Sometimes being nice, sometimes being transparent, sometimes being, wait for it, honest, actually will help you keep your job. And I think Brian Callahan's on his way. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. A lot of phones to get to. People want to weigh in on this. And there is one other thing that Brian Callahan revealed in this Athletic podcast interview that I'm telling you is just so incredibly anti-Vrabel that it might, if you're somebody who really, really hates the way things were going down around here, you will love this. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to weigh in on the program. Somebody texted me and said, what was the hobby? And this was in my personal line about what the hobby was. I'm not going to tell you. It's not bad. It's not illegal. It's weird. You know people that got weird hobbies. Tune into 102.5 The Game today as Vandy Baseball takes on Kentucky. Pregame 5:15, first pitch 5:30, Vandy Baseball. Brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, your countertop experts. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. And 94.9 The Fan tonight will have the Sounds as they take on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp on the road. 6:05 first pitch, Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan. Presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
How have you tried to figure out how to coach your coaches now that you're in this role in terms of instilling the type of communication, environment, energy that you want from them?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that I wanted to hire really good people. Mm-hmm. And so that's the starting point. You know, guys that can one, get along, that know how to relate to each other, that can communicate as a staff and communicate with me, communicate with the other people in the building, the front office. You need good communicators, and you need really, really good teachers. And so that was that's what I was after. And for me, having to coach, I didn't want to have to coach those things, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Those aren't the things I wanted to have to coach. But you hire those types of people, and you sort of let them do their job. You know, I've hired a lot of, I got some veteran coaches, guys I've been doing a long time, and sometimes my job is to get out of the way and let them do their job. And so not micromanage the people. And that's one thing I do believe. Like, I don't need to micromanage these guys. I don't need to tell them how to do every little thing. I hired them because they're good at what they do. And sometimes you just got to set them in a direction, let them loose, you know, and let them do that. So that part of it has been fantastic. If and when I have to actually do some coaching and making sure things are the way that I want to make sure they are, that'll come up as it comes. But so far it's been really seamless for our coaching staff, because I think of the type of people they all are and the type of teachers they are. There's not a whole lot of coaching that I have to do on them.
That was Brian Callahan again on the Athletic Podcast, basically saying like, hey man, I'm gonna let my coaches coach and we'll go from there. Now, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to tell you this is a great coaching staff, because I don't know. Denard Wilson's never called a play as a defensive coordinator in the NFL. I have no freaking clue if he can. So I'm not going to tell you it's a good coaching staff, because, again, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think that Bill Callahan is a good coach, and we'll go from there. But it is clear that, unlike some coaches in the past the Titans have had, including the last one, he's going to let the coaches coach. And again, I think that kind of goes back to this sense of, hey, I'm going to hire this coaching staff. These guys are veteran coaches. These guys have done this before. My expectation for these guys coming in is, hey, you need to be a good communicator. You need to be able to kind of fit with our culture. And it's my job to figure out whether or not on the front end those guys can do that, and then I'm going to let them coach. And if we got problems coaching, then I'm going to try to correct it. But then if it does, then we're going to have to go get new coaches. And I go back to, again, kind of the old school way, the Belichick way, because that's what Vrabel is. It's hilarious to me. Vrabel kind of hates Belichick. It's pretty obvious the way that Belichick and Vrabel kind of interacted over the years. You know, the Patriots run that throwback pass and Brady drops it in a 2018 game, and the Titans run the same play for Mariota. Or how Vrabel used Bill's loophole on the clock against him in the playoff game. Like, he hates him. And it's hilarious because it's like one of these things where it's like, I never want to be my father. And then everything he does is like his father. And that's kind of the Bill Parcells way of doing things. But if you look back to when the Patriots were good, for the most part, Bill Belichick had a very experienced coaching staff. And it was guys that he had been with for forever, guys he trusted. You know, Charlie Weiss, he'd had him for forever. He was a veteran coach. Romeo Crennel was a veteran coach. Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, a 40, 50-year coach. Ivan Fears, the running backs coach, was there for 35 years. So Bill doesn't have to coach these guys up at all. These guys know how Bill wants them to do business. Problem is when these guys leave and Scarnecchia retires and Ivan Fears retires and Romeo Crennel gets a head job and then Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels get head jobs, and now it's like, what the hell do I do? And you got to be able to then, you know, spot, hey, this guy's what I'm looking for, and he can meet the criteria, and I'm going to hire him, and then I got to let him coach. You know, he's not going to do everything the Brian Callahan way, but if he's a good coach, that's okay. You know, I don't think Jeff Fisher was a very good coach. But one thing that I will tell you that I feel like I know about Jeff Fisher let his coaches coach. So when you had Mike Munchak on the offensive line or Jim Washburn on the defensive line, I mean, you were getting the best of the best because he let those guys coach. Those guys were great coaches. And I just think it was pretty obvious. Vrabel had a lot of shortcomings, but I still think he's a good coach, as much as that triggers some of you. One of Vrabel's biggest problems, and it's not his fault, was that he was hired at such a young age in terms of coaching, that he did not know enough people to be able to hire coaches. He did not have enough experience to be able to hire coaches. So it was basically, who do I know from Ohio State? Who do I know from the Texans? You know, who do I know? Who am I comfortable with? And as, you know, convenient as that may be, that's not always the best because, again, when it comes to hiring a coaching staff, you need to get good coaching talent. You know, I wonder on the Denard Wilson front, you know, one thing that does make me nervous is that Brian Callahan doesn't have any experience on the defensive side of the ball and that this isn't somebody that's worked with Brian Callahan before, but we'll see. I do like Denard Wilson because when he did the press conference, when he got hired, he talked about how important the pass rush was, and as a former DB's coach, I'm like, good. That means that his head's not up his tush. 615-737-1025, our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. One texter really mad at Vrabel says, he is not a good coach. I'm glad he's gone. If a pilot made you and your family feel really motivated but never got you to the destination you paid for, refused to use modern navigation tools, and tried to tell his airline he needed more control over how the airline navigates, would you call him a good pilot? I don't think that's a very good analogy. And again, because a couple of you people in here are talking about, you know, oh, the modern offense now and the dinosaur offense. Were you saying that when Arthur Smith had the second best offense in the league? When the Titans were throwing 8 touchdown passes to Jonnu Smith? Were you saying that then? You know, this idea that the Titans don't have a modern offense, or at least they do now, but they didn't have a modern offense, that's bullcrap. Like, just let's stop. Again, I will never forget, I said to Mike Mularkey, years after he left the Titans, I said, you know what's hilarious is you guys came in here, ran the ball with DeMarco Murray, won games, you know, and then I was like, oh, we want to throw the ball, we want a modern offense, we want. And then all of a sudden, Vrabel becomes a coach, and Derrick Henry starts breaking off 99-yard touchdown runs, and it's like, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And he just said, yeah, funny how that works. Like, I mean, were we saying that when Derrick Henry was running for 75 yards and touchdowns, 2,000 yards? No, we were not. It was the same offense. Even if Todd Downing was a dope calling it, it was still the same offense. Boy, a lot of you want to know about this quarterback and his odd habit. Texter says, plenty of anonymous coaches who are nice and open have come and gone, while the greatest winners were mostly like Vrabel in their communication styles and personalities. Belichick, Lombardi, Saban, Paterno, Landry, Switzer, Jimmy Johnson. Ian, you know what the problem with all those coaches that Texter mentioned is?
What's that?
When's the last time these guys won titles? Lombardi, Paterno, Landry. Barry Switzer sucked, by the way.
Been a minute.
And by the way, Barry Switzer, he did not do that when he was in the pros. And that was what drove Troy Aikman nuts, was Barry Switzer was basically, whatever you guys want to do, y'all go do it. And that really, really pissed Troy off. 615-737-1025 is your phone number. One texter into the text line says, the Titans let Vrabel go because Amy is a capricious owner who wants someone like Ran who kisses her ass every minute. I don't know about that. I think Amy wants to be kept in the loop on things, and I don't know if she was or wasn't ahead of time. I mean, I think the reason Vrabel's not the coach is because Vrabel was an a-hole, and that wore on everybody in the building, and it wore him down to the nub, and that was the number one take I have, which is, you know, that doesn't work anymore. Again, whoa, it worked for Joe Paterno. Wow. You know, Nick Saban changed over the years. The Nick Saban, ask D. Mace about this, because he played for Nick Saban at Michigan State. Ask him if the Nick Saban that he played for at Michigan State was the same Nick Saban that was on the sidelines at the end of his Alabama run, or if Saban had adapted with the times and maybe got a little warmer and a little fuzzier. in his latter years. 615-737-1025. More of your phone, 615-737-1025. Plus, I was not expecting to wake up to a Scottie Scheffler story that I would care about. We'll touch on that next. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June 20th for the 615 Open. Make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com.
I can also read you a statement from Scottie Scheffler directly to our Jeff Darlington. Again, if you were just joining our coverage this morning, our Jeff Darlington happened to be there when this confrontation between Scheffler and the police took place. Much of the video that you have seen of the incident itself was from Jeff's phone. He shot it himself. And upon his return to the golf course, Scottie Scheffler gave this statement to Jeff Darlington. This is all a direct quote. "This morning I was proceeding as directed by police officers. It was a very chaotic situation, understandably so, considering the tragic accident that had occurred earlier, and there was a big misunderstanding of what I thought I was being asked to do. I never intended to disregard any of the instructions. I'm hopeful to put this to the side and focus on golf today. Of course, all of us involved in the tournament express our deepest sympathies to the family of the man who passed away in the earlier accident this morning. It truly puts everything in perspective."
That was earlier today. Scottie Scheffler arrested in what is, a wild story. Scottie Scheffler just got done at the PGA in Louisville and apparently is in the middle of his press conference saying that he could see himself on TV while in a holding cell earlier today. He was stretching inside of the holding cell. Scheffler says he did stretches in the jail cell and asked one officer to stay with him while he tried to calm down. It says the one officer asked him if he wanted a total booking experience. He said yes and accepted the sandwich. Sandwich comes with booking? They changed my idea on committing a crime. Kidding, kidding, kidding. Scheffler says, "It took me a while to calm down in the car driving back to Valhalla. I was able to have a nice chat. I was able to give my mom and dad a hug. I couldn't stop shaking for a while. My team and I leaned on them pretty heavily to get back into the frame of mind." And then he went out there and he shot a 66. Now, let me just kind of tell you a couple things. Number one, I don't know who's in the right or who's in the wrong here. You know, when I woke up this morning and I was like kind of following this wild Scottie Scheffler story, I'm like, if the cops told him to stop, why didn't he stop? And then people are like, well, he didn't know it was a cop, and then another cop and let him come through. And again, I'm just asking the question because I don't know. So I'm going to let more come out before I figure out who's right or who's wrong. I highly doubt that Scottie Scheffler, the most boring winner of, I wouldn't say all time, of right now, because this dude wins like it's nobody's. This dude is like Caitlin Clark, but probably better. But he's just boring. Like, I don't give a rat. I will not turn on the TV to watch. Now I care a little bit more. Not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is reality here. You know, the Louisville Police Department has a really bad reputation after what happened with Breonna Taylor. And again, not saying that this is anywhere near the magnitude of Breonna Taylor, but it is another bad look for the Louisville Metro Police Department. I know a handful of Louisville police officers are very good people. So I hate when I see something like this happening. You know, I was on the radio on Wednesday. I do a weekly spot in Louisville on the radio on the station I used to be on. And they were at Valhalla and they were talking about, you know, we're wondering if we're ever going to get the PGA again. You know, that's the big question. Are we going to get it? And I'm like, well, I think you may have your answer now there as far as whether or not you're going to get the next one. But I will say, like, at least this brings some interesting element of this to a PGA championship that I could not give a rat's tail about. Now, I'm not a golf guy, but, you know, Tiger's in it, I care. If there's some kind of real storyline, I care. You know, I was on because was the Masters Easter weekend? Ian, do we remember? I think it was.
What was that? I'm sorry?
the Masters. That was Easter weekend, right?
I believe so, yep.
Okay, so I was doing a bunch of SiriusXM that weekend because, you know, a lot of the Christian people take off. So it's like, okay, let, you know, let Jared will do it. And I did. And so I was doing a lot of that, and I kept having the producer be like, you want to talk to this guy about golf? Do you want to do this? Do you want to cover this? Do you want to talk about this? I'm like, no. They're like, why? I'm like, because I don't think anybody cares. And they're like, well, you know. And then the Masters ratings came out. The Masters ratings were horrible. They were horrible. And I'm like, it's too boring. You get a guy hitting a cop, and all of a sudden, ending up in jail with a mugshot. That does add a Dennis Rodman-like element to something that is very un-Dennis Rodman-like. Still probably won't watch the PGA, but I will also say this. The most disheartening part of all of this about the who's right, who's wrong, is I put out a tweet this morning. And I said, I don't understand, like, why didn't Scheffler stop if they told him to stop? What am I missing here? And the amount of people that got angry that were like, this guy was being told by another cop, you need to do your homework, you need to. I'm like, I'm asking. I don't know. It's like, do we have to decide whether or not the guy's guilty or innocent before we figure out any of the facts? And the real tragic part of this story is that somebody died, right? The kind of what led to all of this confusion and everything else is somebody died. It was rainy. It was dark. They got hit by a shuttle bus. Let me say this. I've covered the PGA Championship at Valhalla. It was 2014. I was on the radio in Louisville, and I covered the PGA Championship. So I know that parking lot, and I know, you know, there's a certain area like where it gets muddy, and you may not be able to get your car in, and it, like, I know all of that. And the fact that somebody died, and the story is, well, did Scottie Scheffler get done wrong? That is disheartening. And so, again, I don't know if this is like a good story for golf. I mean, anytime something like this happens, it's probably never good. But whatever it may be, like, I just kind of felt like when it comes down to the Scottie Scheffler story, I don't know who's right. I don't know who's wrong. I'm not going to pretend like I have any clue who's right. Somebody tweeted me and said, cops are in the wrong. I don't know that. I do know this, though, one time. One time is the Kentucky Derby, and we were doing the radio show on the backside, which is kind of like the radio row of the Kentucky Derby. And I, at the time, was driving a black sedan. You know, not a like an official looking sedan, but it was a black sedan. And you know, I was going in to do the morning show, and the governor of Kentucky was in front of me. And they waved him on through so he could park his car, right? You know, I was supposed to go park at the parking lot, take the shuttle. With my black sedan, I just followed the governor right in and just parked right there. So there is a time where they wave you through if you're important. I was not important, but I looked important. So they waved me on through, and I understand Scottie Scheffler being used to being waved on through. It seems to me like there's got to be a better explanation for the cop that was telling him to stop. He thought it was being okay. He this, that. There's got to be a better explanation for this. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you who's right or who's wrong because I don't have an idea. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. I said something yesterday on this program that is getting taken out of context. So I am going to set the record straight. And it is neither good nor bad for the Titans unless it depends on how you view it, which is why I feel like I have to set the record straight on it. We'll do that coming up next. Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey, that's right. What a great weekend to celebrate Fireball Whiskey. Goes down so smooth and it tastes so great. I will be on the lake for the first time this weekend. Now, I'll be driving the boat, so I will not be partaking in the Fireball. But it's never a better time now that it's lake season. Now that the school year is starting, graduations are. Fireball Whiskey. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. And there's a number one reason why we're going to be toasting Fireball. As we are the number one sports show in town, Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Be 21 years or older to enjoy.